The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this January 27th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin, and we appreciate you being with us on a sunny Tuesday afternoon in the Auburn Opelika area. You wouldn't know it's sunny if you stepped outside with your eyes closed with how cold it is today, but it is a late January day with tons to go over on today's show. Again, I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. How are you, sir, on this Tuesday afternoon? This guy wore shorts today, folks. Christian wears shorts when he goes to the pool and he plays golf. And he has worn shorts, I think, for the first time in 2026 on the coldest day so far this year.
Yeah,
props to you.
I'd second that. if you go and step outside, shows how long you've been in the office. It actually feels really good in the sun when you don't have the wind. But yeah, went with the real professional shorts today, walking in here just a little bit before the show. But man, we have a whole lot, as you mentioned, to dive into. We have some stuff outside of the Auburn sports world that we need to dive into to start the show. Some news, not in the Auburn world, but maybe in the state of Alabama world, that we're going to dive into that could affect Auburn in a couple of weeks based off of a couple big time decisions that are or are not made. We also have a fun conversation that Jacob was wanting to spend a little bit of time on, and I think it's a really good topic of, now that Auburn football is seemingly done in the transfer portal, you could still get a couple of names on the way out, or maybe a couple JUCO younger guys, but at least from the big name perspective, you don't really have anybody that's necessarily on the big boards right now that Auburn is expecting to get. We want to do a grade by position, and yes, we know that this is before snaps are made in 2026, and a little bit more off of, for the South Florida guys, what we have seen, what we have heard, but just an overall grade by position. We'll do that offensive, we'll do that defensively, and we'll look at special teams as well. That'll take us to the 3 o'clock hour, where, man, we have a really fun conversation on Auburn basketball as they jump back into legitimacy in the KenPom, in bracketology, and want to talk about the shift for the Tigers and just the mindset shift, the physicality shift, and talk about some numbers from behind the three-point line versus inside the three-point line, and talk about how Auburn may have found its identity just a little bit. And then we're going to end the show talking a little bit of Texas basketball before we get into games in college basketball tonight, as there are a bunch of really, really good games in the SEC and in the top 25 here today.
Yeah, of course, Texas coming to Neville Arena tomorrow, so we'll start to get a little preview of that tomorrow. We're going to have some fun in the studio as well. We'll pick back up with our guy Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. We've missed him the last couple of weeks. We'll pick back up there, and then a special guest coming in for the second hour of the show. But that is tomorrow. This is today, and with no scheduled guest, we have a full show where the phone lines are open if you want to be a part of today's program. We would love for you to do so. And there's two ways to do it. You can call in at 334-321-1390. Again, that number, 334-321-1390. If you want to call in to be a part of the show, give us your thoughts on anything that we're talking about, the current subject, former subject, future subject, anything that's on your mind that you want to talk about, we want to hear from you. You can give us a call, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And we begin today's show with a situation that has been ongoing now for, I don't know, quite some time, but well over a week.
Yeah.
And it's one in college football that was sort of overshadowed by the national championship game and then the college basketball drama. But here it is once again, and it seems to have been settled. It's Darian Mensah, the Duke quarterback, or should I now say former Duke quarterback, who had reportedly re-signed his deal with the Duke Blue Devils to return to be their starting quarterback. Well, then, randomly, Darian Mensah decides that he doesn't want to play for Duke anymore and that he wants to transfer away. And Duke said, no, 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 not so fast. You signed a deal. Remember this? Remember this paperwork? Remember this contract that you signed?
Yeah, remember this fine print that you didn't read? You just looked at the dollar sign that was bolded?
Yeah. This says you're ours. Your name is ours. Your image is ours. Your likeness is ours. That sound familiar? Yeah. Your NIL rights belong to Duke. And so he sued. And they actually sued him. And then they were in a major legal battle. Because Darian Mensah was wanting to transfer to a school that was unnamed at the time, but was no secret and is now being reported.
The Hyami Hurricanes.
Yeah. He's trying to make his way from Duke to Miami, from North Carolina to the state of Florida. He's trying to go south for the fall, not the winter, the fall, right? And
for the one-year rental.
Yeah. This whole process was a disaster. And it's a process that really has shown the ugliness of college football, right? This was the situation that came out after the Damon Williams stuff at Washington, where he tried to leave. They said no. He said, but why? And they said, because. And he said, okay, you're right.
Yeah, they said, you can try if you really, really want to. But not only do we have our school on your case, we have the whole conference now backing us, too.
But this situation, Darian Mensah tried to leave. Duke said no. He said yes. And then they got into a legal battle. Well, reports today are that Darian Mensah and Duke have agreed to a settlement of their dispute that will clear the way for the quarterback to transfer to another school, and that school is expected to be Miami. What a disaster that this was. Duke was trying to stop him from transferring, and the language used here is enforce the multi-year NIL contract that he signed with the school. Right, they said, you're not leaving. You agreed to play here. You're going to do it. Which has its own issues, right? If you force a player to stay on your roster, right, they could play upset or be upset, or then the coach could have, you know, a negative view of the whole situation and bench him or play. There's a whole lot of cans of worms on that side of things.
That's borderline the Damon Williams situation.
Yeah, basically.
But this is a little bit more clear now, according from what we heard today.
And now you had a situation where Duke just wanted what they were guaranteed, which is kind of weird, right? You will play here. You will make the money we promised you. Right? But Duke was more so saying they wanted to just uphold that contract. They wanted to not go into a legal battle with a student athlete. They just wanted what was right in their mind.
There were even talks of Duke people saying that he could go play for Miami, but he wouldn't be able to make anything from it because it would still be his name under everything Duke. And so,
right.
Again, now you have the Damon Williams situation. You now have the Cal linebacker that went to Clemson. Now is that Ole Miss that I know you talked a little bit about yesterday with the Dabo Swinney rants. Mm-hmm. But this kind of trumps all of them just because the signing of a new deal means less now than it even did a year ago, and you feel like that couldn't even be possible.
Yeah, the contract that he signed with Duke. Again, this is Darian Mensah, who is a very good quarterback and has already received NFL aspirations and NFL attention, right? They said he signed a one-year deal. Actually, sorry, a multi-year deal up to $4 million at Duke.
Yeah, it was 2 for 8, basically.
That's wild. And so here's what Duke wrote in their lawsuit. Duke wrote in their lawsuit, and why they were upset, is, quote, disclosing the monetary terms seeking to license his NIL in football and to another collegiate institution, seeking his enrollment at another institution, initiating contact with admissions or athletic staff at another institution, failing to notify Duke if he was contacted by another institution, and or acting in a way that has now harmed his image and the image of Duke by ignoring the terms and conditions of his contract. Basically, Duke is saying, you leveraged your deal to try and get more money from another school that tarnishes your reputation, which tarnishes our reputation, and we are not going to put up with it.
Duke was one of the first schools to go back to putting the institution, the university, over an individual.
Good. And they won, kind of. They kind of won. I don't really know.
We don't know the official details, I don't believe, yet.
I don't think so.
The actual settlement of if Mensah had to pay anything back or if whatever the case was, but at least there wasn't a give-in from Duke. Their official statement on Tuesday also enforced that, says enforcing these agreements is a necessary element of ensuing predictability and structure for athletic programs. It is nonetheless a difficult choice to pursue legal action against a student athlete and teammate, and for this reason we have sought to resolve this matter fairly and quickly. We also remain committed to upholding this integrity of our athletic programs and our institutional guidelines. We thank Darian for his contributions to Duke University.
Yeah, it says Duke did not release the terms of the settlement, but said the agreement suitably addressed the school's primary concerns. So, I don't know if that's, paying.
So basically Miami paid Duke to
I guess, but
not directly, but how wild is that that's could possibly be at least a little bit of the monetary value.
Yeah, I guess this, but this one's a little bit different than like the Caden Proctor situation, right? When he went from Bama to Iowa for spring and then back to Bama, and it's like, okay, you just stole $300,000 from Iowa. This was a player signing a deal to be paid for the next 2 years, right? So I don't know if technically Mensah owed anybody any money, but I wonder what that was, other than him saying, I'm sorry. Like, Duke was out to prove a point, and they did it. And I think they deserve to be praised and celebrated for this. This is a big deal. This was a, like you said, for the first time in a long time, not only did the institution put themselves first and over the student athlete, which I know sounds ugly, sort of, and sounds wrong and weird, but in this era, we know and have seen how much power the student athlete has and how much they've got everyone by the you know what. This was the first time in a long time we've seen a major program, a major university in the P4 level say, no, we're not putting up with it. And it worked.
Yeah. You feel like this year there was a little bit more of that. There's a little bit more open conversations, even just going back to the words and the whole 8-minute video that Dabo Swinney released with his 18 pages of papers, flipping through and reading off everything that happened in that day. And then even going back to everything that Jed Fish in Washington did, you're starting to see a little bit more of the institution and even the conferences now backing the institutions and the universities and the athletic programs over an individual because, yeah, 5 years ago, if you go and you tell somebody that stopped watching college football 5 years ago that these would be happening, or that you tell them, yeah, the individual has power over institutions or over universities, they wouldn't believe you.
Yeah.
And it goes to show you the negative effect of NIL. And yes, there are plenty of positives. There's also plenty of negatives. And you feel like the negatives have reared its head a little bit more as of late. So it's nice to see universities and these programs kind of take back charge what they still feel like they have, the little power that they have, but using that to not give in to what an individual, a player, or an agent is trying to do for what we know is not the best of the player, student athletes' desires.
Talking the Darian Mensa situation with him and Duke, they settled their dispute today. Miami seems to be the favorite to land the quarterback for the 2026 season. What does this mean? What does this mean? It's settled. It's over. It's done, right? Duke goes one way. Darian goes another, South in particular. What does this mean? Does this mean that this lawsuit has scared athletes into, I don't know, fulfilling their agreements? Maybe. Has this...
to going through with what they sign with.
Yeah.
Wow.
I do think, though, and I think you kind of brought this up a moment ago, I do think this will force and hopefully awaken athletes. I don't know if that's how you...
Awoken?
No. Awoken? Awaken? I don't know. This will raise the attention of athletes to be more careful, right? To really think about your decisions. Christian, when I was growing up, anytime I got money, first of all, my parents would take half of it and put it in a savings account. Doesn't matter what it was. Birthday, Christmas, Easter, shoveling snow, didn't matter. Half of it, boom, gone in a savings account. But anytime I had money and I was at the store and I wanted to buy something, let's say it was a new video game, right? My parents used to make me wait. I'd say, I want to buy that. They'd say, okay, let's wait and think about it.
Yeah, we'll come back next week.
Yeah. Why? I have the money. I want it. I want to buy it. Let's just wait and see if you really want to buy it. That used to make me so mad. But guess what? 85% of the time, I didn't want it. I didn't buy it. Why? They made me wait. They made me think about it. And to make sure that it's really what I wanted and that it was the best thing for me.
Yeah, to make sure it wasn't anything impulse.
That's what student athletes need to be doing right now. I can't imagine how overwhelming and exciting it is to sit down and for a school to say, we want to pay you $4 million to throw the football, to do the exact same thing you're doing. We want to pay you $4 million. Just sign here. Do you know how easy it would be to give a... I'd say, call me Ed Orgeron. What? Tell me where to sign and what pen to use, right? I can't imagine how easy that would be. But clearly these situations are starting to come up more, and this hopefully will force athletes and their families
and their agents. Because that, I think, is where a lot of this boils down to, continue.
To take the time and make sure this is what you want to do. Yeah. Make sure that that's the place you want to be, it's the people you want to be with, and it's the money that you want to make. And then on the flip side of it, this will hopefully continue to protect these organizations, right? Because again, the part that sticks out to me in all of this, and I know we got to get to break, but Duke was upset that they had a private deal done with Darian Mensa, and then he went on the stock market and said, okay, who can do better? Like, that's private stuff.
Yeah.
Right? That's like talking about your salary at the bar. You're not really supposed to do that. So that's why Duke was upset. Not that they were embarrassed. That's a great amount of money, but you get what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
That I hope all of that is what comes from this situation, the Damon Williams situation, and future situations to where we can stop having legal battles between college football teams and their own players.
Three things before we hit to break. Hopefully this can be the start of contracts where everybody can see everything and there is no private, behind closed doors.
Open contracts.
This is what we might be able to give you, but open contracts to where everybody in the entire whoever can go see what Cam Coleman is making at Texas or whoever is making where when he comes to Auburn in 2027, whatever that case may be. Two, this could also get rid of guaranteed money in college because of things like this. It'll be, we'll start giving you stuff after performance, which is what Auburn is doing, a little bit more of that performance-based NIL. Maybe it is time to give a little round of applause to what everything is happening in the Auburn athletic department. And three, you mentioned agents of the pressure of kids and how exciting it is when the doors close and all of a sudden the contract sits right in front of you and you almost, is it Princess and the Frog? Where the guy's sitting there just begging you to sign and begging you, trying to rush you into a decision, and the pressure that you have, that's exactly what agents are doing as well. Because you know how agents get paid? When you get paid. And I guess a subtle fourth. I wish it was the other way around, but Duke goes to Miami November 14th. Oh, man, I wish Miami would have gone to Duke.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. So lots to unpack there as Darian Minta and Duke have settled their dispute. He seems to be on his way to South Florida. But that's not the only dispute going on right now in college athletics. A huge update on Charles Bediako and how he might continue playing for the Alabama basketball team. We talk about that when we come back as we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. A couple of minutes before we get to our bottom of the hour break. Reminder that phone lines are open all show long, 334-321-1390. Text box open as well at 784-1067. And we were talking the Darian Minta stuff from Duke, and that situation seems to be settled, seems to be cleared, everything should be fine. But this other situation is far from fine, is far from clear, is far from over. Mr. Bediako, after getting his 10-day restraining order to basically qualify to be a part of the Alabama Crimson Tide after playing in the G League, okay, got his 10-day restraining order against the NCAA that said, from a judge in Alabama that said...
In Tuscaloosa.
Yes. That said, until we are able to meet and figure this out in terms of his eligibility, he is allowed to play. And the NCAA said,
Darn. You got me.
That's it. That's all they said. That's all they can say, right? So he played. Right? He played pretty well. But that 10-day restraining order was up. And
this morning,
they were supposed to have a meeting this week, but the NCAA's legal counsel couldn't make it there to the hearing. So the judge, again, from Tuscaloosa, who's also a donor to the University of Alabama.
Of nearing $250,000, him and his wife.
They extended that restraining order and said, until we can have a hearing, Mr. Bediako is going to play. And the NCAA said not so fast. They can't do anything about that. The restraining order is in. And until, which, how ridiculous is it that a hearing was set and the representing legal counsel of the NCAA couldn't make the hearing for whatever reason? I didn't see why. I don't think they released it. They just said they couldn't be there.
It's crazy that there was all of a sudden a lot of traffic
in Tuscaloosa.
In Tuscaloosa that couldn't allow him to... Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. If they...
Maybe the weather did... I don't know. Maybe something legitimately held them up. But it's just convenient, right, that there was a hearing, and I don't know where it was supposed to be, but it is convenient that there was a hearing set and the NCAA was unable to show up. So the judge said, cool, let's extend that sucker and let him play some more. So while the NCAA can't do anything about that, they finally, give them credit, they finally got tired of being smacked around, and they finally hit back. And they said, okay, enough of this. We want that judge removed. We want him removed from this situation, from this case, because of conflict of interest. Because of him being a donor to the University of Alabama. That is confirmed from the university itself. The NCAA said, heck no. This ain't right. We may not know much, but we know we're getting screwed right here. And they want him removed from the situation.
And they do so by having a new date that the judge happily extended it to February 6th. So, when Missouri comes to town tonight, Bediako can play.
Mm-hmm.
When Alabama goes to Gainesville to play Florida, Bediako can play. And on February 4th, when the Aggies come to Alabama, Bediako can play. That February 6th date might be rather important, right?
Yeah.
Because Alabama comes to Neville Arena on February 7th.
Hmm.
The hearing is set for Friday. The Iron Bowl of Basketball Round 1 is that next Saturday. Have you seen what college basketball fans are trying to do? I think his name got taken off, but he is the number one vote getter for the G League All-Star game right now.
He got taken off the website. They took him off, and a lot of Auburn fans were because of it. They just kept retweeting the screenshot.
It was fantastic.
It's great stuff, man. So, an ongoing situation there in Tuscaloosa, too. College sports are fine, though. Everything's fine. Don't worry about that. That's what fans are saying about Auburn in terms of the transfer portal. We talk about football next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us as we bring it closer to home for this segment, as we wanted to kind of dive in and highlight a little bit the Auburn football transfer portal class. And that's where we are nowadays, right, is the transfer portal class versus the high school recruiting class. I think we should have retention rankings or a retention class or whatever the case may be in some way, shape, or form. But wanted to at least look at what Auburn did and has done. And we can do this one or two ways, Christian. We can basically grade just the transfers, or we can grade the positions based off of transfers, high school recruits, retainment.
That was my mentality.
That's what I was doing too, but I just wanted to make sure that's how we wanted to
just
roll.
Just because of that, retainment. You might hear names that you haven't heard in a little bit, and I think that, I think those go into the grades as well as the high school kids that are going to be. So everybody that's going to be in orange and blue in Jordan-Hare Stadium, we rank and grade the positions with everybody in there.
Yeah, and so if you have thoughts on this, you can definitely call in. Tell us positions you're excited for, players you're excited for, whether it be transfer portal guys, returning guys, freshmen as well. We'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390, or you can shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067, with just your, again, what you're excited for, your grades for Auburn football for the 2026 season. And I'll leave it up to you, sir. Do you want to go offense or defense first?
I think we'll just stick with go offensively first.
Well, okay.
I mean, just follow the list that we have listed out. I feel like that's just a solid way to go about it.
Well, I mean, we start at the highlighted position, and that's quarterback, right?
Yeah.
You start talking about trying to grade what Auburn did there. You obviously lost everybody. You lost them all. They left. They were scattered, and we figured that was going to be the case for Auburn. But you go and get several replacements, two from South Florida, one from Oregon State, and you also get a high school recruit in there as well. I think because of Byron Brown, most people would say, yeah, that's an A, that's an A+. I'll go with an A- right now. And the reason I say A- is I'm taking the average, right? Because I believe Byron Brown will be very good, but we just don't know what you have behind him. I think Tia has a chance to be solid, right? The Oregon State kid, but we just don't know right now. And I do want to see Byron Brown do it here. I do want to see him do it against SEC defenses. I do want to see him go through with, yes, a lot of his same players on offense, but some new guys for him as well. So for now, I'll say quarterback A minus, but all the room in the world to improve on that grade.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have four now in that room. You have obviously Byron Brown, but you have Reese Brush from again, your high school rankings. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Tia, and then you also have Lachlan Hewlett again from South Florida. Four quarterback room, and while Byron Brown is yes going to be your presumed starting quarterback, it's nice to be able to have names and have enough orange jerseys in the practice room and in the practice field to be able to have a little bit of a competition. I'm kind of right there with you. I'll go a little bit more. I'll say the A because of your ability to go and get that fourth legitimate quarterback. And so, yeah, I think there should not be any complaints on being able to, although it seemed easy and it seemed, oh, well, yeah, forks are found in the kitchen when it comes into Byron Brown coming with Alex Golish from South Florida to Auburn, the ability to still get it done because there were plenty of other schools. I know Florida State was in that conversation of wanting to get Byron Brown and keep him in the state of Florida. And so despite it being quote-unquote the easy thing to do, when you're able to get a guy like that, I think it is very wrong to not be very excited about what he could bring to this Auburn team.
Yeah, I think so. And quarterback, again, is the one that is highlighted. We got a question in our on-the-line text box. 334-784-1067 says you can have the rest of either of their college careers, Byron Brown or Deuce Knight, who would you take? You can have the rest of their college career right now to choose a quarterback, Byron Brown or Deuce Knight. Who would you choose?
I'll choose the answer that Auburn chose.
Byron? Go with Byron Brown.
I'll take what I've seen in college football rather than, yes, you get more years, but especially in today's day and age where quarterbacks are at the plenty every single transfer portal. I'll take somebody that's 3,000, 1,000, again, one of 12 quarterbacks to do so versus, again, nothing against Deuce, but you've seen him in Mercer. Or you've seen him play against Mercer. So yeah. I'll take a little bit more of that polished quarterback with that offense coming in.
Yeah, you take the 1 year versus a guy who has several years of eligibility, but you take proof in the pudding versus, I guess versus the
if you were building like a team, but for this year, yeah, for right now, if I could take either one, yes, give me Byron Brown.
Okay, let's move on to running back for Auburn. Again, grading the positions offensively, defensively for Auburn, given what they brought in through the portal, what they retained on the roster, and the high school recruits as well. Again, that's an important factor here with all of this. Running back for me, I think, is another A minus. That's where I'm at on this one. Again, you got to remember, you get an A, you're talking like 95 out of 100 and up. Like that's you're talking elite, but I think Auburn has a chance to be dang near elite at the running back spot. You bring back Jeremiah Cobb. You bring in one of the best transfer running backs in Bryson Washington, and you also bring in several dudes in the transfer portal, including Davenport from South Florida, so you have familiarity there, and Tay Meadows from Troy, who I think is an unsung hero. And don't forget, you bring back the youngsters and Omar Mapson and Alvin Henderson. Auburn's running back room is loaded yet again, Christian. So A- for me, and again, more room to improve on that grade as the year goes on.
Right in there with you. No need for me to even add anything else. You get that many names. You bring in Bryson Washington. You keep Jeremiah Cobb. You mentioned Davenport and Tay Meadows. I think that you're going to have a loaded running back room, which is exactly what you need of when you talk about college football working its way back into that two running back system, needing two, if not three, guys to carry the load. I'm right in there with you.
Offensive line for you. How would you grade it out, given what Auburn went and brought in through the transfer portal? I think Auburn's efforts in the transfer portal at the offensive line need to be given an A, just from the amount that they brought in, but your overall evaluation and grade for what the offensive line, at least on paper, looks like right now.
Yeah, I'll calculate that into my decisions. You weren't able to go and get the 4 and 5 stars that you were hoping to get, that you were in conversations with. Some went to Ole Miss, some went to LSU, others went other places. But the amount of volume that you were able to get, I'm going to give right at a solid B. And I think that is the room that can give you the most improvement, right? You have the number of names that can give you everything that you want in an offensive line. They just are the ones that have the most question marks, in my opinion, on is it going to work out, because there are so many new names. A lot of them coming from South Florida, where, yes, you played in the G5, now the G6 level with the Pac-12. That I guess you can officially – is there an official start date for the Pac-12? I mean, I know that they're
I think
technically,
just with the season. So, with the football season.
So are we allowed to officially say the G6 now? Is that what's – politically correct?
Oh God, I guess so. Yeah,
saying it like X, formerly known as Twitter. You're gonna have to refer to it as the P6, formerly known as the P5.
Yeah, terrible. No, I'm not doing that. No,
But no, a solid B for me because of the volume, and again, that is a B with the most amount of movement up or down, one way or the other, based off of what it looks like in 2026.
Yeah, I like where Auburn's at offensively on the line. I mean, you don't really know where everybody's going to fit. I mean, talk about a puzzle that you just have to piece together. And
which is a good problem to have for Auburn.
It is, yeah. And for new offensive line coach Tyler Hudanick, who we're going to find out what exactly he's got in his belt. But I mean, how many transfers was it, 9 or 10 that you ended up bringing in? Michigan State, Akron, Miami, South Florida, Oregon State, South Florida, JMU, Stanford. I mean, you went and got serious dudes up front, on top of bringing back a couple of names like a Cale Ellis, who I think will be involved here somehow, right at either the guard spot or even in the center rotation as well. I think Auburn feels good, at least with the dudes in the room. Again, do I have any idea how they're going to work out? No. I think Ramil from Michigan State will probably be your starter at left tackle. I feel good about Cole Best at center. I think Joseph Simmons from JMU is probably at right tackle. Guard is where things start to get a little interesting. You have Cole Skinner in there from South Florida. You've got Plaz from Miami that needs to fit in there. Jacob Strand, the Oregon State kid. Then there's, again, Cale Ellis. So there's
a couple of interior guys in the high school level as well.
Yeah, exactly. So the offensive line is going to be okay. It's just how long does it take to come together? So I'll say a B for now on the offensive line. Until I see more, I'll give it a B.
Yeah, which again, I think you're in that same boat. This has the most flexibility if we were to regrade this at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Because the number, the volume is there, which is a great problem to have, but getting it polished, getting it the way that it needs to go for this offense in 2026 is still the biggest question mark.
Let's do receiver and tight end here before we get to break. We'll do defense and special teams when we come back. Again, grading Auburn football position by position based on transfer portal, high school recruiting, and retainment. Receiver for you, what's the letter grade?
Based off of, again, this is trying not to take in comparison to what you had last year rather than what it's going to look like this year. I think that's how we're grading this, because otherwise you'd take a couple of points. But this is just looking at what 2026 is going to bring in. I think just because there are a couple more question marks, again, it's going to be another loaded room. When you're looking at, again, of the 21 guys that Auburn brought in at the high school level, one, two, three, three of them are wide receivers. You have Brian Williams, you have Deshaun Spencer, and you have Brady Marchese that are coming from high school. And then you know all of the guys that came over from South Florida. You get Keyshawn Singleton, which is probably your biggest wide receiver name, at least as of right now, at least when you're looking at it on paper. I'm going to go right – I'll go B again. Leaning towards maybe B minus. Again, the names are there. The talent is there. You might not have a polished wide receiver one, which – may not be the worst thing ever.
Yeah, I'm going B minus. I think Keyshawn Singleton will be that wide receiver one. But there is a lot of hope in that room, right? Tight end, on the other hand, I mean, I'm not overly confident there. Could it become something? Sure, right? You bring in Jake Johnson from North Carolina. You've got Hunter Herring from Louisiana Monroe, Jonathan Echols from South Florida. You also brought in Arliss Boardingham, who was at Florida, and then Bowling Green. So
Hunter Herring is the Swiss Army knife, isn't he?
Yeah. But I think they're looking at him at tight end.
But that Taysom Hill tight end role of...
I forgot about Xavier Newsom, too, the Howard kid. That guy's huge. So there's potential there, but I'm not going to be like, tight end, that's the position to know. I'm not there yet. So I'll say a C at the tight end spot.
I'll go C plus. I think that when you look at what there could be, I think Jake Johnson could be a really nice piece for this offense. And you mentioned the Howard kid a little bit more on the running side of things. Where were you at? You said C?
Yeah, C for a tight end.
We'll go C plus, and a little bit of a confidence on why I'm going B instead of B minus for the receiver room. Going back to that is because, again, a little bit more hope, but I think that Bryce Kane and Sam Turner being retained are really good signs.
Okay, we shall see. We'll talk defense and special teams when we come back. We'll grade those and wrap up hour number one.
This is Ian Fitzsimmons from ESPN Radio, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. This is On the Line, and we're grading Auburn football by position based off of the portal, off retaining, and the high school rankings. And let's just do special teams kind of as one big grade here, sure. Christian. In terms of punter, kicker, I don't know if we really know what punt return, kick return looks like as of right now.
I'm hoping that it's at least relatively similar with Jeremiah Cobb back there and then the wide receiver, cornerback, safety type guy for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Because I think that was a big reason on Auburn bringing him in. But
talk about continuity in terms of special teams. You have your starting kicker and starting punter coming back.
Yeah.
Alex McPherson kicking field goals and probably kickoff duties as long as he's healthy. And then Hudson Cock coming back, the Australian, coming back for you as a punter, who I know had a shaky year at times. There were some situations where he was not put in good situations. Other times, I think he just got a little ahead of himself. But when he was able to just step back there and put a boot into it, I mean, he showed he's got the ability. So I don't know. I mean, I'll say B for special teams in terms of those guys. And God, if you can get McPherson back to where he was, man, back to fully healthy and kicking automatic 50-yarders, that'd really be nice.
Yeah. I rather than us having the hope for offensive line and wide receiver and tight end, this is one of those until I see it, I'm not necessarily going to believe it.
Okay.
And with special teams being one of the biggest concerns, again, this is nothing regarding the individuals, rather just the special teams as a whole. And as much as we talk about punt returner and kick returner, those guys mean absolutely nothing if the 9 or 10 guys also on the field at the same time can't do their individual jobs. And so that's why the new coaching staff, it has to win me over. It won't be very hard. Just don't hold or don't put a block in the back every single punt return and catch the football.
Yeah.
How weird is that? That's the bare minimum for me to go from a C to possibly a B or even an A in the mindset of Auburn fans. But right now, just kind of deadlocked in the middle at a C.
Defense, we got just a few minutes. We'll have to kind of go a little quickly here. Four positions, D-line, we'll just include edge and tackle all together.
Yeah.
Linebacker, corner, and then the safety spot. D-line for you, your grade, what is it?
Right in there with the offensive line. Could has a little bit of flexibility, but I think right in there, maybe a little bit more. If I could go in between a B and a B+, almost like a medium rare plus right in there. But B, leaning towards that B+ with room for improvement.
I'm going to go with a B as well, just because there's some turnover there, right? I'm really excited for Walter Mathis Jr., the LSU transfer. I also think that Cody Sigler could be a guy to know from Arkansas State. But I love the idea that you bring back Malik Autry, Jordan Crawford, those guys are very talented. J.J. Falk, the young guy, right? Keldrick's younger brother will be returning. I know he didn't see a ton of action, but Darion Smith as well is someone that I think
Nate Johnson
is
from Missouri, too.
Yeah, I forgot about Nate Johnson. I think that's one, too. So there's a lot of talent there for Auburn on that defensive line, and so I'll go with a B. I'll go with a B there. Let's go to the next level. Linebacker, how do you feel about where Auburn stands right now? Oh, I guess the edge spot we didn't really talk about. I guess I forgot to include some of the edge guys. I mean, Jared Smith, Joe Phillips, those guys on the edge. That might change my
answer. Deshaun Womack, too, from Ole Miss.
Ooh, I may go B+. I might go B+.
We'll add the little plus symbol.
Yeah,
there.
I'll go
B+. If I was leaning
between
the two, I forgot that, yeah. Because edge rushers, you almost mix in with linebackers, but I guess officially go down as linemen. For linebackers, for me, I think this is the best position on the field for Auburn. I think this is an A, leaning towards an A+.
Yeah, it's dang close. Xavier Atkins, Elijah Melendez coming back, DeMarcus Riddick, Jacquez Wilkes, Bryce Dees. I mean, you're talking serious talent right there, plus a transfer or two. So I'm with you. I think linebackers an A. Corners and safeties, loop them together. What do you got?
Just going complete DBs, I'll throw that in between a B and a B+, leaning towards more of a B+.
I like a B for now. If you can get some production from the transfers, I think you have a lot of potential there. You bring back those young guys, Anquan Fagan, Sylvester Smith in the back end, Rayshon Pleasant, Blake Woodby. The names are there.
Our boy Eric Winters.
Oh, God, yeah. Just got to get the production from them, man. So Auburn should be in a good spot. A lot of A's, a lot of B's, very few C's. Looks like a report card from Jacob back in the day. And a D in there somewhere. We're in and out of time for hour number one. Stick around. A lot more coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika, sports leader.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us here on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of the first hour of today's show, then you can go and check out the podcast version of the program on our station website at ESPNAU.com, or if you have the Radio Alabama app. If you don't have it, you need to download it. But if you do have it, you can click on ESPN 106.7, go to the bottom, click on podcast, and you'll find it there as well. Because in hour number one, we talked some college athletics news because Darian Mensa and Duke have settled their situation. Betty Otko and the NCAA in Alabama really haven't settled there. So talked a lot about those two things in hour number one. And then we graded Auburn football as a team for the 2026 season. Position by position, went through and broke it down. We'll do this several times between now and the start of the season. But this was kind of the initial grading with the transfer portal kind of slowing down. So all of that was in the first hour of today's show. Again, if you missed it, check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
And for hour number two, talking a whole lot of basketball. We have Auburn basketball news, a little dive into Texas basketball as well, a little bit of a further conversation on that tomorrow, but at least some of the headlines that we want to talk about for the game inside Neville Arena coming up tomorrow evening, and then some great games in college basketball tonight. The two games last night, one of them delivered, one of them did not. We'll talk about all of that here in hour number two. And again, with the Tuesday edition of On the Line, no scheduled guests here for you in hour number two. So if you would like to be a part of any conversations, you can do so at 334-321-1390. The phone line is always open as well, or the text box rather, is always open at 334-784-1067. And before we dive into Auburn basketball, one quick hitter on the NFL. Do you see who the Bills hired?
I did see this, and at first, when I saw the news come across, I said, Joe Brady, that's a great guy to be in charge. And then I had to think about it for a second. I said, hold up, wait a minute, something ain't right. They fired McDermott to promote Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator. They just promoted from within. And if the issue was, we're not getting enough out of Josh Allen in the offense to win a Super Bowl, then why are we promoting the offensive coordinator and firing McDermott?
To get more out of the offense.
Didn't seem... Once I started thinking about it, I was like, I don't know. It wasn't so much the hiring of Joe Brady. I think that was... that he was going to get a head coaching job at some point.
Right.
It was more so, why did you fire McDermott if this was your backup plan? I don't know. Weird. Good for Joe Brady.
I was going to say, yeah, fantastic for him. And obviously, I mean, he's shown success every step of the way. I remember we had conversations of if he was going to come back and be a college head coach. But why do that when you can be a head coach with a Super Bowl or a MVP winning quarterback?
I mean, I don't know, though, because look at what the Bills did. I mean, I guess you could blame their defense this year if you really wanted to, right? I mean, they...
Turnovers in that game, too, from the offense didn't help.
Didn't help them. No, it didn't. I mean, defense was not great for Buffalo this year, and their offense was solid, so maybe they feel that he... I don't know. I felt it was kind of odd if you're going to fire McDermott to promote Joe Brady, then why fire McDermott at all? But
well, again, whatever. Just that simple thoughts on Joe Brady, being named the Buffalo Bills head coach after being the offensive coordinator for Josh Allen. He takes the step up, and so we'll be interested to see if he's still the one that wants to call plays, if he still wants to be that person, because he won't be able to sit up in the booth anymore. He'll be field level, and so how will that play a factor? Again, just a quick hitter to get the show started here in hour number two. But a whole lot of basketball news, as we mentioned. And we start with Auburn basketball as they jump into the top 25 once again in KenPom after their win at Florida. They are up to a 7 seed in bracketology. They fell from anywhere from an 8 to a 9 in some of these other bracketologies, whether you're looking at ESPN or elsewhere. But wanted to have a really cool conversation on the mindset shift for the Tigers. And it's something that we've spent a little time about. I know that Brad and Daryl last week were both big advocates of it and talked a little bit about it as well. And so wanted to just be able to have a really fun conversation about what we've been seeing from this Auburn Tiger team, especially on the offensive side of the floor, because defense, you feel like, has definitely amped it up. But wanted to dive into some of the numbers. And once I read you my total math equation that I spent a little bit of time on here today, it understands, or I guess it allows for an understanding of why this Auburn team is having a little bit of success. And what you're saying, that you go through California to get to Texas, is that?
Yeah,
that
drive through California to get to Texas.
Yeah,
you're going out of the way, but you're going to get there eventually.
Sure. That's basically what all of these stats go to show you, these simple terms of Auburn's physicality and Auburn's two-point game is the reason that Auburn basketball is winning right now. And so,
funny how that works.
Yeah. Had the thoughts on, again, why are the wins following Auburn right now based off of how they've played? And correct me if you think elsewise, or if you think otherwise, Jacob, or again, if anybody else has thoughts and agreements or disagreements, feel free to chime in to this conversation. But I feel personally that the SEC is a little bit softer of a league this year. And I don't necessarily mean that from the mindset or from just the detriment that the word soft has, but there's a little bit more finesse, I think, in the SEC this year. There's more tempo, there's more outside shooting rather than bully ball in the paint. You still have a couple of those teams, but yeah. I feel like generically the game has gotten faster, which leads to avoiding contact, which leads to more points, and I think that is the general way that you've seen the league take a step from this past year to this year.
I think that's because it's a guard-led league
sure.
this year.
Yeah.
Rather than having the bigs like Jahni Broome,
which
like
is
you saw a
reason.
Year ago,
yeah.
I think it's more guard-heavy. When you think of Texas A&M, you think of their guards. When you think of Arkansas, you think of their guards. And then bigger, even big guys that are playing like guards right now.
It's almost a little bit more positionless basketball. Of even the
yeah.
big guys
yeah.
are the ones bringing the ball up the floor, things like that. Again, so not necessarily the derogatory word of softer, of saying, yeah, you're soft, but just a different type of league this year than I think it has been in the past. And again, because of that, you're seeing more tempo. You're seeing more outside shooting. You're seeing just the game in general adapt to that NBA style of game of run and gun. We're not going to shoot from the mid-range. All of our points come in between the blocks or from outside the rainbow. Yet I think Auburn, over the past couple of games, has gone back to not necessarily caring about a lot of the statistics and what the statistics say. They've gone back inside, they've been more physical, and they've reaped the rewards. You look at what Auburn has done in SEC play. This is from 8 of 25, 7 of 26. The outlier of Arkansas, where you were 10 for 22. 6 of 21, 2 for 19, 2 for 17, 5 for 15. You are 40 for 145 from 3 in SEC play. That is good for 27.5%. in SEC play. From 2, however, you are 26 of 45, over 50%. 22 of 39, well over 50%. 24 of 38, well over 50%. 18 of 36, just under 50%. 21 of 37, well over 50%. 20 of 34, that was against Ole Miss, where I think you really established that physicality. Well over 50%. Almost 67% from 2 against Ole Miss. And 21 of 39, well over 50% against Florida. You are 152 of 270 from 2 in SEC play. That is 56% from inside the arc. You then add that with 158 of 209, 76% from the free throw line, where averaging in SEC play. You're averaging almost 23 points from the line.
Which is ridiculous in itself.
But a lot of those are also could be added to points inside the three, points down low. You just have to earn them at the free throw line rather than just bully ball inside. This team in SEC play is shooting 56% from two and getting 23 points per game from the free throw line. That's ridiculous.
That's the winning formula. That's how this team creates offense. That's how this team gets into a flow on that end of the floor.
Which is something that I would not have guessed about this team looking at it on paper going into this year. You thought that its points in the paint would come in transition, would come on fast break layups, on fast break dunks, and a lot of their game would be created from the outside. And Stephen Pearl has still been very vocal about, we still want to shoot the three, and I understand that. But now you're seeing, as you're saying, that winning formula. And again, wrapping up the reason of why I'm saying all of this, Auburn almost shoots 60% when it takes the ball inside the three-point line. And you figured a lot of that out in the second half against Ole Miss. Who would have thought it? But it's true. Auburn dominated Florida in the paint, outscoring them 38-28 in the paint in Gainesville with one of the most physical teams on paper and even going back to last year in the entire basketball world. And you're absolutely dominating inside the paint right now. You have found your winning recipe. You have found the success that you need to rely on. And how nice is it to not have to shoot 33s every single game? Again, you're 5 of 15 from 3 against Florida. If I asked 100 people standing outside the Walmart, whether that's East University or wherever, hey, how many threes does Auburn need to make on Saturday to beat Florida in Gainesville? 12, 13, 14. I bet you 95% of the people say 10 or more.
Yeah.
What if I told you they barely shot more than 10, yet still found the recipe to win on the road, to silence the crowd and use the physicality that we didn't know that this team had to ultimately be the strength of the offense? And then you compound that with the defense that you've seen over the past couple of games. I know that it's not black and white. This isn't just a full-on blueprint, but my goodness, you now have a game and a half plus of a sample size of what you are seeing as of late of what you need to do if you're this Auburn offense.
You know, you say you wouldn't have expected it by looking at this roster preseason, but I think if you start looking at it, in hindsight, of course, as we're, 20 games into the schedule now, but look at the play style that this team has and is made up of. Keyshawn Hall, Tahad Pettifer, Kevin Overton, Elijah Freeman, right? Guys who have the basketball in their hands. Sebastian Williams Adams, who we've learned can handle the basketball. They like to get downhill. They're at their best when they get downhill. They're at their best when they put the ball on the floor and make something happen, which is alluding to the stats you're talking about, Auburn being so successful inside the three-point line, but it's kind of been there all along, right? That has been there. Based off of what I just said, those guys are at their best getting to the basket. Can Tahad Pettifer knock down crazy threes? Duh, yeah. Keyshawn Hall? You bet. Sway? Yeah. Freeman? Yeah. Overton? Yeah. But I think when you watch them play, they are most effective when they get to the basket, which is in two-point range, which is points in the paint, which is forcing your way to the free throw line. That's where they are their best. And you said it. They finally have figured that out and are playing their best. By their stats in terms of their height and weight, no, I would not have predicted that. But if you look at their play style, this should not be surprising. It is surprising, but it shouldn't be based off of how they play. Now what needs to happen moving forward, starting with Texas tomorrow night, is Auburn needs to hammer that subject, hammer that fact, but not limit yourself to that fact. And I think that's what's exciting about this team is if you as a defense start to play five in and refuse to put your toes on the three-point line and guard Auburn, they will make you pay. Auburn can't fall into the trap, but Auburn still has to have that ability in case you're losing, in case you need a big shot, stop a run, or they just leave you open. You have to have the ability to step out and knock down a three, no matter who you are on this team. And if you can do that, pairing it with the two-point success and the free throw line, this team will get to a point where it's really hard to beat them.
Florida wanted to force this Auburn team to shoot it from the perimeter. And early, they showed that they could. And all of a sudden, went to playing a little bit further out. And then it turned into, again, you didn't necessarily rack up the assist numbers that you would have loved to. But you got the ball into the hands of the playmaker's hands. Whether it was a mismatch, whether it was just a mano-a-mano, I'm going to go to work. A lot of that with Keyshawn Hall in the first half. And you saw plenty others do it in the second. But how nice is it to be able to look at a team and not feel like you have to rely on the three? Because every once in a while you saw that in non-con play of where there just wasn't a lot of physicality, a lot of lazy shots early in the shot clock because it was open. Mm-hmm. Now you're seeing one extra pass if needed to turn a good shot into a great shot, or you're seeing 2 feet in the paint, a kick out, and rather than a contested three, a pump fake, a blow by, and a drive to get to the hole, all of a sudden it's a layup or you get fouled and you're headed to the free throw line. Again, you've shot 270 shots from two in SEC play. If you divide that by seven SEC games, you're averaging 38.5 twos attempted per game. Times 0.56 if you're 51%. That means you make 21.6 two-pointers a game. You multiply that by two, 43.5 points a game plus 22.6. That's 65.8 points a game that you're averaging from two in the free throw line.
Good enough to win.
That makes it to where those 5 to 8 threes that you want to kind of be at if you're this Auburn team, and then if you do get hot, it can look a little bit more like Arkansas where you make 10 or 11 of them.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden just adds to everything. But working inside out, I think over the last 6 quarters has proven that this is the mindset, this is the physicality factor that Auburn needs to kind of pursue in a league where most teams want to have a little bit more of that finesse.
We'll keep talking Auburn basketball when we come back. Begin to preview Texas, who comes in here tomorrow, plus a cool quote from Stephen Pearl on something Todd Golden told him about a player on this team, and we have text messages to get to as well. All that coming up as we're just underway in hour number 2 here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, welcome back into the ESPN 106.7 studio. This is the Tuesday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins. He's Christian Griffin. As we continue talking Auburn basketball, Texas comes in tomorrow night to Neville Arena, where the Tigers will try to get back-to-back SEC wins, trying to get another one over the Longhorns, a team that is uber-talented, but wins a big game, and then they lose a game. And then they win a big game, and then they lose a game. And I don't really know what they want to be. But I did want to highlight this very quickly. Stephen Pearl said that Todd Golden told him after the game, Florida's head coach, that Todd Golden said, "I had no idea how athletic Keyshawn Murphy was." It's pretty good. That's pretty good quote from Todd Golden, national championship coach, who admitted basically that they were not ready for Keyshawn Murphy, who went for 16-9 in Gainesville on Saturday. Talk about somebody that has stepped up and has become not just an impact player, but a guy who's making game-winning plays, who's making the extra effort play, who is a huge reason that Auburn is now winning basketball games again.
Averaging 11 points a game, 6.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists, shooting almost 60% from the floor. And it's what you've seen over the last couple of games. We highlighted it against Arkansas, where he had 16-10. And then only played 21 minutes against Missouri, but he still had 9-8 in that time. But it's been the last three games that you've seen even more of a big step up. He had 11, 16, and 14, and then 16 and 9, as you mentioned, the game in Gainesville. And I think it was Daryl that said it last Wednesday when I got to talk to him about it's one of the first times that you're now seeing Keyshawn Murphy not have the fear in the back of his mind of, okay, what happens if I jump and it hurts on the way up? Or what happens if I land awkwardly? There's no more of that fear, because anybody that's had any sort of knee injury, that's always in the back of your mind, even just running up and down stairs. You feel like there's a little bit of that, okay, what happens if this starts nagging? But we've mentioned it, the springs that Murphy now is able to play with, and you're seeing that both on the defensive side with rebounds, with shot blocking, with shot altering. You're also seeing a lot of that on the offensive side of the floor as well. And, yeah, I mean, 6'10", we knew he was a little bit undersized for that quote-unquote center position, but my goodness, has he made up for that with his ability and his athletic ability that you're mentioning right now. I mean, he has two double-doubles over the last five games in SEC play, was one rebound away against Florida. That needs to be stated enough. 16-9 against one of the tallest teams and the best rebounding team in the country.
We got a text question in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067, asking if there's any concern about the amount of minutes that Auburn guys are playing right now. It says we kind of got used to a deep bench with Bruce Pearl. You look at least the main contributors right now, Keyshawn Hall averaging 33 minutes a game, Tahat Pettiford averaging 31, KO 29, Sway 27, Freeman 25, Murphy 24, Jovic 18, and then obviously the drop-off is significant. I mean, you're basically playing a seven-man rotation right now. Maybe there's some concern there. Good news is, with guys like Keyshawn Hall and Tahat Pettiford, they don't know any different. That's all they've ever done their entire life.
This entire team, almost.
Yeah. I mean, they understand what their role is. Does it suck? Yes. Could there be an instance where Auburn has some fatigue down the stretch in February, March? Sure. I think so. But I just think that's who this team is. And the problem is, right, for some, we're talking about Keyshawn Murphy, you just don't have anybody to go to other than Phillip, who has played good minutes as a big. I wouldn't consider him a five by any means, but he's played good minutes as a big. Sway's played good minutes as a big. Not having a true backup point guard is rough right now for Tahat Pettiford. KO, not really having anybody to go to for him is tough. I was really hoping Simon Walker was going to be further along than he is. And Keyshawn Hall, I mean, you get Freeman with him, but I mean, you just don't have a whole lot of depth. I mean, Freeman and Jovic are coming off the bench. That's it. That's what you got. That's your five-man rotation, or your seven-man rotation. So, yes, a little concern, but nothing crazy right now.
I think there's a little element of concern, but I think it's also a benefit that Auburn has gotten used to where you're used to seeing 9-10 guys play every single night. This is not any different than what 95% of college basketball teams have been doing, and so how nice is it that you're now going back a little bit, or maybe not how nice, but you're almost just falling back into what all these other teams are doing. Shows you how nice it's been over the past couple of years.
We'll talk about Texas a little bit. Team coming into Neville tomorrow, plus big games in college basketball this evening as well. We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
All right, we got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And talking Auburn basketball, Texas coming in tomorrow night. We'll also kind of highlight what else is going on around college basketball this evening, some big games. And Someone texted in to our text box 334-784-1067 and said, just kind of adding on to the Keyshawn Murphy praise, saying that him making his free throws is huge. And yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. The fact that your big man is making over 70% of his free throws.
And you're now shooting almost 76%. You're shooting almost 76% in SEC play, which is really nice.
Yeah, and as of late, I mean, Keyshawn Murphy, that is 6-for-6, 6-for-7, 3-for-3, 3-for-4. That's what he's done in his last four games at the free throw line. A, the fact that he's getting there three times a game is good, and then he's making them when he gets there is massive.
The fact that he is not a liability, he's not somebody that you have to take off the floor when you get in crunch time, because if he goes up and skies for a defensive rebound, they can't just sit there and hack a Shaq, Keyshawn Murphy, before he outlets it to one of the guards.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact that he is now out there and can confidently knock them down, and you saw him do that at Florida. What is Auburn shooting as a team from the free throw line? I had it pulled up and I lost it. 74%.
Yeah. As a team, Auburn is shooting exactly 74%.
You would like that number to be a little bit higher. That being said, from what this team shot early in the season, that number has nothing but risen throughout SEC play.
Yeah, but that also includes, and I don't know what the actual number is, and if you could exclude Emeka Opurim's 50%, Blake's 50%, if you could exclude, I think that'd be it. Everybody else actually plays. Looking at Phillip and Sway. Phillips isn't great. His is 59. Sway's 48.
It is.
But then everybody else is 70 and above.
That is taking that into consideration. So rather than just looking at percentages, you can see the season totals. And yeah, they're 73.98%.
That's excluding?
That is everybody as a team.
Right. I'm saying I wonder what it would be if you excluded, again, guys who don't really play all that much, or you see what I'm saying?
I got you. Yeah.
Of Auburn's true seven-man rotation.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying. Opurim and Blake are a combined 6 of 12. So
okay,
it's not that they've shot 40 free throws. So
I mean, you could say Auburn's probably a 75-76% free throw shooting team,
again,
give or take.
Which is right where you basically want to be. I know that average and almost that demand has increased a little bit in the NBA just because that's now positionless basketball. It used to be if your centers could shoot 60%, your guards could shoot 80-85, it was good enough. But now you see half the guards in the league at 85%. You're seeing guys shoot 92-93% on the year, and then you're having those big guys come along and shoot 70-75%. But if you could shoot 75% free throws, with the amount of times that Auburn gets to the free throw line, again, averaging right around 23 points a contest every single time they play a game, whether that's Neville Arena or whether that's on the road. This team shoots just about more free throws than anybody else in college basketball. And early on in the season, that was one of your only strengths, was being able to draw fouls. Now that is one of your biggest strengths, and continuing with the minimizing weaknesses of your interior play as well as the three-point shot when it gets hot.
Well, it needs to continue tomorrow night as Auburn will host Texas inside of Neville Arena. Tip-off is set for 6 o'clock. Pre-game will be 5:30 over on Wings 94.3. Andy Burcham, Randall Dickey will have the call. And this Texas team, again, we'll have some more conversations tomorrow with our guy Daryl Dappert, who will be with us. Y'all announced this last week, right?
We did.
Okay,
yeah.
So Daryl is going to be in studio tomorrow for the entire second hour of the show.
Yeah, I heard you mention a special guest. I didn't know if you were wanting to tease it for one more day, but no, we did talk about that. So
we'll get to talk to him tomorrow from 3 to 4 in person, because he'll be in town to cover the game, so he's going to swing by and join us. We'll talk a little football and transfer portal with him, and then we'll talk some basketball tomorrow as well. So we'll do a deeper dive on Texas, but a little
pre-preview
of the Texas Longhorns. I think this is safe to say they're one of the more dangerous teams in the SEC, but their schedule or their record doesn't say that at all. They're 12-8 on the season, 3-4 in SEC play. They're on the outside looking in, but yet they have three top 25 wins already in SEC play, 4 on the season if you count their win over NC State, and a lot of close losses, which I don't like to use as a bonus reference point, but this team has potential to beat anybody in the league. They've proven it already, and we're 7 games in.
I mean, a 1-point loss to Arizona State, an 8-point loss to UConn, and then a 3-point loss, which isn't a great loss, home against Mississippi State. You lose at Tennessee. You lose on the road, or rather at home, to Texas A&M, and then a close one at Kentucky. But there's been very few games that they are just boat raced in and make it to where it is just not competitive whatsoever. And, I mean, this is almost a earlier Texas A&M from a couple years ago or Mississippi State type of team where it's like, you know, they're not going to win every game, but my goodness, if you get them on a bad night for you, they're going to make you pay. And you mentioned it, they're 3-4 in the SEC, but they have 3 of the more impressive wins adding to their resume in the SEC, and with a couple of those quality quad one losses, which makes the hair stand up on my back from having to even think about that. Same thing with you of close losses, the quality quad one losses.
Good loss.
Yeah. We're going to reward you for losing a basketball game. But when you look at everything they've done as a whole this season, you do feel like 12-8 does not tell the tale of the tape.
No, and the only game that really, in terms of looking at the box score, that it does tell the story is the Tennessee game. I'm looking back just to make sure, and that's a game they lost by 14. They were down by 14 or 15 at the half. Closest they got in that second half was 10. So that's the game where Tennessee kind of big brother, little brother, just kind of held them out with their hand on their forehead type of thing.
Second half of Duke as well in the season opener.
Yeah, but other than that, Texas is around in their games. If they can beat you by 20, but you ain't going to beat them by 20, and they will not be scared to walk inside of Neville Arena tomorrow, an arena that early tip-off in the cold. I'll say it. I don't know what the crowd's going to look like, to be quite honest with you. You'd love for it to be jam-packed. You'd love for the sellout to actually be true.
And it should be after back-to-back wins
correct.
On the road in the SEC.
Yeah, you would think that that would be something that fans would want to get in the building and see against, again, a talented Texas team. Folks, Tremon Mark, Jordan Pope, and Dalen Swain are legit. Those are NBA guys.
Yeah, Voikatitis in there as well. He's become their big man down low. Those 4 names, you mentioned it, Dalen Swain, Tremon Mark, Jordan Pope, the 3 point guards. Dalen Swain's a little bit more of a forward, but plays that Keyshawn Hall type of role that is more than comfortable with the ball in his hands. And then Voikatitis, who has become a big-time scorer and a big-time rebounding for this Texas Longhorn team. Those 4 names average 68% of their scoring. And so it's very seldomly that you're able to stop 2, if not 3, of those names, but you're going to have to find a way to and then make sure that those other guys don't go above and beyond their average, making up for some of the other guys that don't necessarily get that scoring. They average 86 points a game, 40 rebounds. They're quietly one of the bigger teams in the SEC. They're a really big, really athletic team, average 13 assists, 6 steals. They do turn the ball over 13 times a game, and that's something that Auburn has to take advantage of. At home especially, get this team uncomfortable, make the crowd noise, be a big part of this contest, turn them over, make them feel like they have to play from the hole that they're digging themselves out of. And then you want to dive into some more of the analytical numbers. Texas is 11th in their offensive ranking, according to KenPom, and they are 97th in defensive ranking. In comparison, Auburn is 13th in offensive and 64th in defensive. And so both of these teams really good, really efficient offensively. Auburn as of late, Auburn a couple games ago was in the 90s. I think they were 91st.
Yeah.
Going into the South Carolina game defensively, have jumped up to 64th. And so you hope that that number continues to increase, and you would love for Auburn to have a really good night offensively. When you're looking at the strength of schedule, this is all again according to KenPom, Texas's overall strength of schedule is 26th. Auburn's is 2nd. And so again, when you look at battle tested and you talk about the numbers or the record, maybe not telling the whole story, you feel like you can say the same thing as an Auburn fan. And when you're looking at the net strength of schedule ranking, which for most people is somewhat equivalent to power rankings or power ratings when you're looking at college baseball, right? It's the teams that you beat, but then also the teams that that you beat who they beat. So that second or third tier list working your way down. Texas is 291st.
Auburn, it basically gives your record validity.
Sure.
Is what it does.
Yeah, again, yeah. The teams that you beat, of those wins, who did those teams beat?
Yeah.
Because, again, a good win for that team then makes it to where your strength of schedule, your net increases just that much more. Texas, again, is 291st. Auburn is 23rd.
That's a big difference.
It's a very, very big difference when you're looking at that. And so it's one of my favorite keys to the game that I like to use on the Lee Scott Sports Network is when you're the better team on paper, when you're the better team on the floor, just be the better team.
Yeah, just be the better team. Do what you do. And, again, this game coming up tomorrow, 6 o'clock, we'll have more on it on tomorrow's show. But this is one that Auburn
needs. Yes.
Needs, yes. And everybody, you know, people, you don't need to do anything. You don't need to win a game. Blah, blah.
You do.
Shut up. Auburn needs this win.
Yeah, you didn't want to fool on. Yeah, no.
Yeah, Auburn needs it because you have a chance to win your fourth game in a row. It would be your fifth out of the last six, including going back to the Arkansas game, right? And then it ramps up from here because you go on the road to Tennessee Saturday. You're off in the midweek next week, which I think is a greatly timed bye week. Unless Auburn keeps winning, then
still,
either way, right? Then you host Alabama tomorrow or next Saturday afternoon. You host Vanderbilt in the midweek, which will be a remarkable game. If Auburn keeps winning and Vanderbilt holds on, that could be a top 25 game inside of Neville Arena. Then you make the return trip to Arkansas, right? That's your next five games where two of them are on the road, two of them are at home. If you split and go two and two, I think it's a win in itself, right? So let's say you do that. You go 2-2 over that four-game stretch. That would put Auburn at 6-5. The Texas game could either make you 7-5 or 6-6. That's a big difference at the halfway point of what Auburn's trying to do in SEC play. That's why a win tomorrow would do a lot for you.
Yeah, if we tell you that through eight games in the SEC schedule, Auburn's 5-3, I think even if this is before conference play hit, and I tell you, you can't pick the wins, you can't pick the losses, but you're 5-3.
With three top 25 games on the schedule, not knowing if you win them or not, just three top 25 teams on the schedule.
I think I would take it.
I think so.
I'd have a sub-question if I was allowed to ask it, but I think I would still take it, much less you look at the 1-2 start.
Yeah.
Or the 1-3 start.
I don't know. 5-3, I don't know. Before the season started, I don't think we had the
Not before the season, before non-con, or before conference.
Well, yeah,
play.
That's what I meant. Yeah. I don't think we had the Missouri game penciled as a loss, right? I think you expected Auburn to win the Missouri game, South Carolina, Ole Miss. Georgia and Texas A&M, you probably... Yeah, I don't know. Through eight games, I think 6-2 is probably the expectation.
Sure.
So maybe a little bit behind.
I guess more so a little bit just based off of the start.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Yeah. But the question is, can you build on it?
Yeah.
Which starts tomorrow.
Which goes again to show you that South Carolina win, the gross win, the 71-67 win over South Carolina. It was a very ugly game. It was not pretty. And we talked about it coming back on here on Monday where we said we won't really talk about it throughout the year, and it's not one that you're going to go look at and be happy that you see a W in that column, but just seeing a W in that column makes things that much better.
Yeah, I know a lot of Auburn fans continue to go back to the Texas A&M no call or reverse call or whatever the hell you want to call it. I mean, the fact that that would put Auburn at 6-2 right now, you win tomorrow night, you're 7-2 heading into this stretch of Tennessee, Bama, Vandy, and Arkansas.
Yeah.
God, you'd feel really good about that.
It
with
is,
a bye week going into it. 7-2. Well, no, you'd have the Tennessee game.
7-2 with a Tennessee game, but at worst.
7-3 in the bye week.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd feel good about it. But you can technically still be 7-3. No, you can't. You can be 6-3. Wait. That math doesn't add up. I don't know. You'd have a lot more wins and losses, if I can tell you that. So, wow, is that the bell? Yes, it is. Got to go. Okay, we'll take our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We'll wrap it up after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And been a good show today, man. We've had a lot of fun, a lot of good conversations, talking about ongoing drama in college athletics with Darian Mensa and Duke, Charles Bediako and Alabama and the NCAA, and a whole lot of other stuff. And so talked about those situations. Also graded Auburn football by position now that the transfer portal is basically done for the Tigers. And so gave our first initial grades of those positions. We'll do it several more times between now and the start of the season. So did a lot of that today and talked a lot of basketball today as well, as Auburn has started to turn it around a little bit. Christian did some good math and numbers, and it took him several days, but he got there and broke it all down and basically just told you how and why Auburn is starting to figure it out on this little win streak that they're on. And so,
yeah, I was planning on using that for the bye week after I finally, you know, was able to put together those numbers. Mm-hmm.
AI is a powerful thing.
It is. It really is.
And then we did a little preview of Texas coming in tomorrow to Neville Arena. So all of that can be found on the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com or by downloading the Radio Alabama app.
And while we have just a few moments here on the way out, we talked a little bit about the games yesterday in college basketball. One of them delivered all of the desires. If you were able to stay up a little bit and watch the number one team in the country go on the road to BYU, it was Arizona that was running away with this contest, and BYU all of a sudden made a little run of their own in the second half to make it a one-point game. But Brandon Burries, one of the most exciting, most electric players for Arizona, finished with 29 points in the game-winning block, which if you haven't seen, go and watch it, because it's not one of those plays defensively that you're taught, but just the defender brought the ball handler back towards the middle of the field, and Burries, who was guarding the left wing, ran all the way over to almost the opposite block. To get the block. To ice the game. So Arizona remains undefeated, 21-0. They're 8-0 in Big 12 play with the 86-83 win over BYU. And then you mentioned it yesterday where you're a little scared of that Louisville team.
Yeah,
and
Cam Boozer, I could feel that one coming.
19-10 at home and could have gone for 40 if he probably really wanted to. Duke gets a big win, 82-53. On their home floor in Cameron Indoor. And some really good games tonight. You have Michigan State going on the road to Rutgers. Not necessarily a good game, but a top 10 team in action. One of the top games so far of the season, Nebraska and Michigan. Can GBR somehow stay undefeated as they go on the road to Michigan?
Yeah, they've got some injury issues. They've got a guy out, Braden Frogger, who has been out for several games. He averages over 12 points. He's out tonight. And then their big man, Mast, is questionable for the game tonight. Don't know exactly what it is, but that's their big man. He averages 14-6, so he is questionable for the game tonight against Michigan.
Not too many times you see an undefeated team go on the road and be underdogs. They are 12-point underdogs. Michigan is 12-point favorites.
Yeah, that's wild.
In that contest. Three SEC games, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Alabama, and Kentucky and Vanderbilt, your nightcap. So three good games that we'll be able to talk about tomorrow on the show.
Yep, should be a whole lot of fun. We are back tomorrow. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 will rejoin us. We'll get caught up on what's going on in Athens. And then hour number two tomorrow, Daryl Dapperidge, Double D, joins us in the studio for the entire second hour. So we're looking forward to that. It'll be a lot of fun. 2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.